that we have. So we wanted to take some of the questions that people have about this and talk to the top law enforcement official in the Commonwealth, someone who frankly has to do that job for the entire country because this administration doesn't show up to bat time and again. So let's just dive into those questions. Does that work for you, Attorney General?
It's great.
All right, sounds good. So the first question is from Sally. Have you found there are more scams, phone, email, et cetera, during the COVID-19 crisis? And who are the most vulnerable individuals in your experience?
You know, Sally, this is a great question. And sadly, we're seeing a lot of scam activity. You know, if you go back to the Boston Marathon bombing, when we set up the One Fund in the state, we saw people attempting to scam that. So it's certainly the case that in times of crisis, there are still those out there who are looking to exploit people's fear and anxiety and need. So let me just tell you a few. Right now, we've got a lot of small businesses and folks looking for federal stimulus money. And so we're seeing a lot of texts and emails being sent by scammers to people where they pretend to say, look, we're the federal government, and we're going to help you get your money. Give us all your information here, and we'll get it to you. And sometimes they charge a fee. These are scams. People need to be aware of that. We had a woman named Suzanne who was reaching out to people a couple weeks ago who had student loans. And again, saying, I'm somebody who's going to help you with your student loan at this time. There's a federal program out there. Fill out this form, give me all your information, and we'll take care of it. And of course, if you do that, then she's a scam artist, she's got your social security, she's got your information, and she's off to the races. We've also seen people, this is pretty sick, who have been putting online things like a coronavirus treatment or cure or vaccine. There was actually a company up on the North Shore that had a social media post about some special anti-coronavirus vitamin, right? With that, you know, we sent them a cease and desist letter. They took it down immediately. So I just really want to warn people as we go forward that this activity is out there. Spanish speakers, you know, be wary that there was a recent thing going around online where it was actually through texting encouraging you to click on and get information that would give you access to an $877 coupon and, you know, in the process would take all your information. So this is, unfortunately, the state of play. Report these things to our office so that we can get after them. Because when people report, then we're able to warn the public. And really watch out for emails that look like they come from the government. I think, excuse me. Why don't we go to the next question?
No problem. Let me jump in here. Get a glass of water. We're all talking so much because we're on these conferences all this time. But the fact of the matter is there are scams out there everywhere. And whether it's, you know, false cures for the coronavirus, people telling you that some vitamin is going to cure it, the president telling you that bleach is going to cure it. I mean, frankly, you know, Attorney General, I wish you could send a cease and desist order to the White House, to President Trump at his press conferences. I mean, this is serious stuff, but in all seriousness, I mean, gosh, a company in Massachusetts should not be talking about a vitamin and saying it cures coronavirus when it doesn't.
Yeah.
But that's not even half as bad as telling people to ingest bleach and night Lysol or whatever. We heard calls to poison control companies went up just as soon as the president said that crazy stuff.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine? He is putting lives at risk. And in my view, he's killed people as a result of his abject failure to act and do what is necessary to do, not to mention the misinformation that he's been putting out there. But before I started to cough, I was going to tell people, be really careful about sites that look like they're coming from the CDC or the World Health Organization. A lot of those are scams. So look only to the coronavirus.gov site for information. And again, you know, the federal government is not going to be emailing you about your stimulus check. You'll find ways to reach them through banks and applications, be really, really aware of that those things are scams.
Very helpful. Very helpful. So thank you very much. The next question is from Mary. She's asking, how should we report suspicious emails? You're obviously taking action here, but what should we all do if we see something suspicious just coming into our own inbox?
Yeah, I would, I like it when people either call into our office or write into our office. If you go on our site, you can see there are a whole bunch of ways you can contact us through Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or just through email at our mass.gov/AGO website. And again, it's just helpful because, if it's happening to you, it means it's probably happening to dozens and dozens of other people.
So we're all on online platforms like Zoom, Facebook Live, where we are right now more than usual. Renee asks, what security issues should we be aware of?
This is really important. We're all familiar with the Zoom bombing that's gone on. And, in fact, some AG's offices, including ours, have been looking into Zoom right now. New York is leading an investigation into Zoom. When that was announced, Zoom then took some actions to better protect its users. But here are some tips for people out there using Zoom. There are other products as well. WebEx is very secure. Microsoft Teams is also another product. Zoom seems to be popular, but be careful with Zoom. And if you're going to use Zoom, here's what I would suggest. First of all, don't make your meetings public, okay? Keep it confined to your own listserv and require a meeting to use a meeting password. Use the waiting room feature so that you control who is admitted into the actual meeting. Don't share your link to that Zoom conference publicly. That's why we're really warning people to keep your links off of unrestricted sites or other social media that are available to the public. And I know there's a balance because sometimes churches we've seen have wanted to encourage a lot of folks open to the public to participate. But know that when you do that, and you're not confining it to your regular listserv, you're also opening yourself up to people who are going to try to hack in and do bad things. Manage your screen sharing options so that you're using screen sharing in a quote host only function, and always make sure you're using the most up-to-date software and that your highest security settings are applied. Is this foolproof? No, but we do think if you take these steps, they will be helpful. We also have, we have on our website, there's a COVID website that we have on our mass.gov/AGO page that contains information and an advisory on how to navigate Zoom during this time.
That's great, and we'll check that out because we have a great coronavirus website as well at molten.house.gov. Got a big update today, so it looks a little bit nicer and more sophisticated than it did 24 mm-hmm. hours ago. And we'll try to get that information up there too. Okay, Valerie's got a question that I'm wondering about too. She says she's on a pension and price gouging is occurring in stores and online. I've seen this. I went to buy something on Amazon just last night, and it was like twice what it was supposed to cost just because there aren't enough to go around. So we all know supply and demand. There's a free market, but price gouging is something different. Can you talk to us a little bit about exactly what that is and how we protect ourselves from it?
Well, Valerie's bringing up a great point. Unfortunately, we've seen now for weeks price gouging. And, what we've seen is people really looking to exploit this crisis for their own profit, for their own gain. And that led our office a few weeks ago to issue an emergency regulation that bans price gouging, that makes it illegal in the state. Under current Massachusetts law, the only price gouging that's banned applies to oil, actually the sale of oil and gas. But we used our authority under the Consumer Protection Act, Chapter 93A, to issue an emergency regulation that makes price gouging of any product illegal. So, we saw bottles of hand sanitizer on Craigslist, a 2-liter bottle going for $250. Or, on eBay, we saw efforts to sell packs of face masks for $50. I mean, these were like exponentially more than they were sold at during regular times. Is there a balance there? Sure. You know, we've got a problem with supply and demand, right? And so as the supply of certain things, whether it's masks or sanitizers, has become depleted, of course, in some instances, the price goes up. We understand that. But there is a line that one can cross where you are charging an unreasonably high price for something. And the problem is, not only do people not have an ability to pay right now, we get a lot of people out of work. They don't know how they're going to buy groceries, pay rent, and the like. But there's also a scarcity with some of these products. And, you know, to the people out there buying, you know, reams of paper towels and toilet paper, I mean, don't hoard, people. You know, stores have had to take measures to limit that activity, but it's sad that they kind of had to in the first place. Report these things to our office, because we want to get after it. This applies not only to individuals, but also to our hospitals right now, who, you know, we were getting reports that they were being charged four times as much for certain supplies. And again, you know, there's a line that at which point this becomes totally unreasonable, and we've got to shut that down. So the current law in Massachusetts is no price gouging. Report it to me if you see it. And I'll tell you, since we announced our regulation, we've had probably 300 calls. Each one of those has gotten a call back and calls out to those stores. In some instances, it was justified. In other instances, it wasn't. But report them, because I promise you the team will act on that quickly.
Yeah, that's great to hear. I mean, you know, we all read in the history books and see in the movies about the patriotic service that so many Americans did in World War II, where we had a lot of troops on the front lines. We had an awful lot of people who were, you know, having their own victory gardens at home, for example, so that they didn't have to buy as many vegetables from the store. And, you know, but the reality is, of course, even during that time, there were people who were taking advantage of it. And it was up to people like yourself, the Attorney General, to make sure that we kept folks in check. And we're in a new kind of war now. But the fact that you and your team are doing that every day is important. And the fact that so many people are actually doing their patriotic duty, not hoarding supplies, making sure they're actually practicing social distancing, not price gouging if they own a store. That's also, you know, that also should get credit as well. There are a lot of good people out there.
There are people doing amazing things and really selfless things, and that's beautiful. We did reach out to the platforms, you know, eBay, Amazon, Craigslist, and said, help us monitor for the price gougers. We did a whole AG multi-state action around that. And they've agreed, you know, to help. So that's positive. But that's what I want people to know is report the price gouging to us for sure.
Okay. So the next question is from Danny. He says, I'm really worried about debt collectors taking my stimulus check. Can they do that? Can debt collectors take his stimulus check?
Well, as you know, under the CARES Act, the answer is no. Nobody's supposed to come after your stimulus check, including a bank where maybe you have some overdraft fees. That stuff, that's your check, and nobody's supposed to be touching that. Debt collectors, you know, this is another example of us acting quickly in response to what we saw as a real problem. We issued an emergency regulation that stops debt collection right now in the state of Massachusetts. Again, you know, people can't pay right now. And, you know, it just would be a shame if their credit gets unnecessarily just ruined amidst this pandemic and circumstances beyond their control. So we banned things like debt collectors garnishing your wages, taking repossession of your car, for example, or filing a lawsuit against you in court. All of those things are banned right now in the state of Massachusetts. If somebody is harassing you for debt, come to our office, give us a call. And we've really tried to be clear that, you know, stimulus money needs to go to the American families right now who desperately need it. And debt collectors need to be sidelined for a bit. It doesn't mean don't pay your bills, okay? I mean, I'm not suggesting not to pay your bills. I am suggesting, though, that when companies send stuff on for debt collection and there's a debt collector out there coming after you, that's not supposed to be happening right now.
Okay, really good to know. Really good to know. I mean, obviously, yeah, if you can't pay your bills, you should be paying them. But if you absolutely can't, you know, the CARES Act was very explicit that this is your check and you should get it. Okay, so now I got to tell you a little story about the next question, because some of these questions were submitted in advance, and my team and I were discussing them this morning. And when this question came up, my team said, you know, Seth, there are so many important things. We shouldn't be answering questions like Stanford's here. But I said, you know what? I want to know the answer to Stanford's question. Stanford's question is, am I entitled to a rebate on my gym membership? Now, I'm not as gifted a natural athlete as you are. I wasn't a star basketball player like someone else on this call. So I got to go to the gym and stay in shape. And I'm kind of curious, can I get my gym membership rebated because of this pandemic?
Yeah. You know what? This is not a frivolous question. I have to tell you that the single highest number of complaints that my office received, other than the complaint that people couldn't get unemployment benefits, which was terrible, and you know, we call for more resources for that. Boston Sports Club. Okay, Boston Sports Club operates, you know, in locations all over Massachusetts and all over the country, actually. But we had over 1,000 complaints from Boston Sports Club members about their gym membership because the company wasn't letting them cancel and wasn't refunding them money even after they had canceled and yet again were charged for the next month. So the rule here in Massachusetts, because a lot of people need to know this, under Massachusetts law, okay, you have a right to cancel your gym membership at any time if there's a substantial change in the business, like it's shut down by the government, okay? Like, you have a right to cancel.
Seems like that's a pretty substantial change. The business is no longer operating.
I think that qualifies. So it's not automatic, though, okay? So, like, a lot of gyms on their own have said, we're going to freeze memberships and not charge people. They're doing the right thing. It doesn't just happen self-execute by itself. You actually should get in touch with your gym and say, I want to cancel. After that, you shouldn't be charged anything. Boston Sports Club, people couldn't even get through to cancel because it was on, didn't allow an email cancellation and nobody was answering the phone. And so they still got charged 2 weeks later for their upcoming April membership, which really annoyed people, understandably. So those people are entitled to a refund after the point that they canceled. But the good news is we worked out a deal with Boston Sports Club. They've agreed to freeze everybody at no cost, upgrade memberships when they come back online. And then, you know, go back and look at Massachusetts customers when they canceled and try to make them whole. So that's good. You know, these are the things that add up, you know. I mean, at the end of the day, I think, you know, people are hurting right now and every little bit of money counts. And so every little bit of money that you're unfairly charged, it matters.
That's exactly right. And that's exactly the point of this next question, which I know is going to be important to an awful lot of people in Boston because we got so many sports fans in Boston. It's a Twitter submission from @patchy61 who says, what are my rights to purchase tickets to a sporting event that has been postponed?
Yeah, this is a tricky one. And you're right. So many concerts. We've got Celtics, Bruins, Sox. We're not quite into football yet, but I mean, a big deal, right, for a lot of people. So what we've encouraged people to do is to work directly with the event organizers to see if to ask for a refund. And, you know, that's what we want to see happen. Customers have their money refunded. Some are saying, well, wait, you know, we got to see maybe the season's going to come back online or we're going to rebook the shows from later out. We'll give you a voucher for that. Some people may want to do that. A lot of people may not want to do that. First, work with the organization, you know, and the organizer. See what you can work out. Otherwise, call my hotline, which I should give people the number. It's 617-727-8400, 617-727-8400, and file a complaint, and we'll be happy to get involved.
Great. Okay. So now we have one more question before we go to live questions. And a lot of people have written in with live questions. So we're going to get to them in just a second. But lastly, from Eric, how can I protect myself from identity theft? This is important.
Yeah. Great question, Eric. So here's what we advise people to do. Okay. First thing you should do is you can freeze your credit file right now. I suggest credit freezes, because what that does is prevent somebody going on and using your personal information to open up an account in your name somewhere. We saw this after the Equifax fiasco. And by the way, our office litigated against Equifax. We just settled a couple weeks ago for $18 million coming back to Massachusetts. But that's the first thing. I suggest, you know, if you were going to refinance or something, then you have to unfreeze your account. But I think it's a good thing to do because that helps cut down on identity theft. The other thing is your credit reports, you know, whether they're TransUnion or Experian, review them and see if there's anything that looks funny to you, and then get in touch with the credit reporting agency. Monitor your accounts. I mean, the thing is, so everybody does this online. We don't do paper as much. One of the things I find is that I'm not as attentive, to be honest. I'm not as attentive as I should be online versus when I have that paper in my hand. We all have to get really vigilant about actually reviewing online statements, going through them, and picking up inconsistencies. So, you know, the bottom line is, in Massachusetts, we have really strict laws around your data privacy, and we have really strict laws about companies, you know, needing to report any breaches. So if there is a breach, know that we're going to go after those companies and try to make you as whole as we can. But of course, the damage is done, because if that gets in the hands of hackers and a lot of this stuff is overseas, you know, you're in real trouble. So best defense is to protect yourself, monitor your accounts, freeze with the credit bureaus until you actually need credit, and just continue to be vigilant. Change your passwords too.
Change your passwords. That is so important. So important. It's sometimes the simplest things that can stop these really serious crimes. Okay, on to live questions. And the first one is from Ruth. She brings up something that's incredibly important. You know, many of us were just before we get on this call about how nice it is to spend time at home with our families. Many of us are trying to look at the bright side of this pandemic, even folks who are out of work but get to spend a little bit more time with their loved ones or their kids. But for some people, that's actually really dangerous. So there are a lot of folks out there who are worried about what to do with increased domestic violence, you know, due to these stay-at-home regulations. Is there anything in the works to deal with this?
Well, I think it's a really, really important point that Ruth is bringing up. Sadly, with people quarantining at home, some not working, we're concerned about increases in domestic violence and also increases in child abuse. I think that one of the things that my office is working on is more direct messaging to potential victims or survivors of domestic violence, and also on the child abuse side, more information for people to look for and be aware of so that they can report suspected child abuse. Specifically, you know, we have something organized throughout the state called the SAFE Plan, and it's basically a hotline that a victim can call to report domestic violence and, you know, to seek access to shelter space and the like. Right now, shelter space is really down in the state. It has been for a while. We need more space, particularly for women and children. Some of the hotels have opened up to accommodate that, which is good because hotels are not really used right now. But we need to do a couple things. One, work on a long-term plan for better housing for survivors of domestic violence. And two, get messaging out right now, which we're trying to do, whether it's posting it at grocery stores or laundromats or through our networks, that here's where you can call, here's where you can go for help if you're a victim of domestic violence, or if you at least want to think about an escape plan. You want to think about a way out. You may not be in a position to leave the house now, but you may want to start thinking and talking about it. That's out there. And I think we've got to start to train. Normally, see, the problem with child abuse is that, in part, is that kids are not in with mandatory reporters every day. You know, a lot of times reports of child abuse are coming from their teachers or their coaches or, you know, social workers at school, guidance counselors. Kids aren't in those places right now. So how do you train school personnel on how to, even through something as simple as a Zoom call or, you know, a Google chat room, how do you identify signs and what's the proper way to address that? Really important issue, Ruth, and I'm really scared about that.
Well, thank you very much. This sad reality of this pandemic, and it's a reminder that as we try to keep our chins up and joke about all the different habits that we're developing and video conferences and everything else, there are people who are really hurting out there, and people who are literally scared to be at home every day. So. Another group of people who are hurting are incarcerated people or formerly incarcerated people. And Mallory says, look, they're an important part of our communities and the Commonwealth, too. The executive branch, Mallory says, has done nothing to release people despite the asks or the requests from families and recommendations of public health experts. On top of that, formerly incarcerated people were carved out of the payroll protection program. What will your office do to make sure funding is made available explicitly for formerly incarcerated people and their families, businesses, and organizations?
Yeah, no, great issue, Mallory. Unfortunately, right now, we've seen reports throughout the country of prisons and jails, almost like nursing homes, being real hotbeds for the virus. And that's really concerning to me as Attorney General. And it's why a few weeks ago, before our Supreme Judicial Court, we took the position, actually, and advocated for the release of whole categories of individuals right now. Individuals who are sitting in jail awaiting trial, for example, on nonviolent offenses, or individuals who are sitting in jail who are not dangerous, but nevertheless, can't make bail. We have prisoners in our state system who are just a couple months away from release. We advocated to let those individuals out, and obviously ones with medical needs. The court didn't go as far as we had advocated for, actually. But I'll tell you what is happening. The sheriffs, one by one, and district attorney's offices have actually released a number of folks from our jails and houses of corrections. Defense counsel are rightly filing motions. I know of district attorneys who are assenting to those motions, and those individuals are released. Important in that, though, is to make sure that those folks have a place to go, that there's a release plan, because we want them cared for and not just left homeless, which is just heartbreaking. So, I know there's been a focus on that. And, we've certainly encouraged continued work in the Department of Corrections. A concern I have, and a concern I think all of us would have, I'm sure Mallory would share this, is not only do you have prisoners, incarcerated individuals, you also have staff, right, coming and going each day into those facilities, going back out into communities. So it's really important that there be testing and that they have PPE and that we really work to decarcerate and remove from the public health hazard individuals who really don't need to be there.
Yeah, I'm sure that this a tough question. I've been a huge advocate for criminal justice reform in Congress, but you're absolutely right. It's not black and white. I've been saying that we really should make sure we have a robust way to take on cases, kind of on a case by case basis, because there are some jails that are completely infected with coronavirus. Like, I guess Cook County Jail in Chicago is infamous for this. It's a total disaster. Very dangerous. People are going to get very sick. Hopefully not die, but real concern. Then there are other jails that are actually, they've really been doing a good job of social distancing. Mm-hmm. And if they release a bunch of people, the sad reality is many of them will go to homeless shelters where they could have a much higher risk of getting infected than if they were staying in prison. Yeah. So we've got to make sure that we're thoughtful about this, but it is incredibly important. And bottom line is that, as an advocate of criminal justice reform, I believe in making sure that people actually get reformed. And get back into our communities, get back into our society, have a chance for a productive future that benefits not just them, but all the rest of us. And that's we've got a long way to go with that in America.
Yeah, I think your advocacy has been really tremendous on that front. And, I think that all the things about, have talked about in this area, really are laid bare too in this pandemic. We're seeing the real inequities and injustice of some of this that you've spoken about. And, you know, fundamentally, remember, as is the case if you're in an assisted living facility or nursing home, you're in a confined space. I mean, literally, if you're in a cell, you know, you can't be 6 feet apart from somebody, and yet, you know, and yet you're almost a sitting duck, you know, for potential rampant spread of the virus. So I think we've got to do all the things you talked about.
Yeah, I'm with you. Okay, so from Lisa, can the office compel everyone traveling to wear a mask? Officials claim that this power lies with Baker's office. I tell you, I go down to Washington, D.C. last week, and I was shocked. There were six people on my plane, so plenty of room for social distancing. I wasn't anywhere near, I wasn't within rows of another passenger. And yet the flight attendants were coming around serving drinks, not wearing masks. And I couldn't believe this. Oh. It was unbelievable to me. And I said to one of them, like, why are half of you, sir? Some airline employees were, but these two flight attendants weren't. I said, what is the policy here? Isn't it kind of policy? They said, no, it's personal preference. Like, well, that strikes me as wrong in every way. So I signed on to a letter just today in Congress saying that the Federal Transit Administration, the Federal Aviation Administration should make it very clear that anyone providing a public transportation service, airlines, you know, train conductors, whatever, whoever's out there working on these public transportation systems should be wearing a mask. But what's happening with that at the state level?
Yeah. Well, as a legal matter, sure, the governor has the authority to order everyone to wear masks. Mayors have the authority. Boards of health have that authority as well. So the authority is there. And I think that masks are really important. I mean, and I'm so glad you signed that letter because there is no way. First of all, it's so dangerous to fly right now. You know, everything that's flying through the cabin, I know they're cleaning, but everybody should be in a mask. Everybody should be in a mask. And, you know, and it's incumbent upon those companies to provide those supplies to their workers, just like it's incumbent upon cities and PPE to transit workers. But, you know, if you're not wearing a mask right now and you're out in a public space with other people, to me, that's a really selfish act that we're at, because you may feel like you're fine and you may be fine, or you may be COVID positive and asymptomatic, which so many of people are. You are putting somebody else at risk, particularly older people or people we know with respiratory issues or immune deficiencies and the like. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. And I'd even say, you know, when it goes, I live in Boston. It's congested. I see a lot of people running everywhere, and I'm all for the exercise. But, you know, unless you're going to go run on a trail somewhere or, you know, be in an area that's really not with a lot of people, cover up. I see runners blowing by me, like literally 1 or 2 feet. And it's super selfish that they're there blasting out all this air, right? And droplets. And I just wish more people were less selfish. You talk about patriotism and what people need to do. Masking up is like really important. And not everybody can have an N95, nor they, you know? I mean, those should be for our frontline workers, particularly our healthcare workers and first responders. But everybody can find their way to, you know, you can make a mask out of socks right now. And I think we really need to see that.
Yeah, I just want to make two points on this that I learned just in the course of this pandemic. Because when I used to see masks, especially if you go to countries in Asia, you see a lot of folks wearing masks. You know, I always thought, oh, geez, well, what are they so scared of? You know, they're just worried about getting some disease or whatever. We don't do that at but the reality is that what a mask does, it doesn't so much prevent you from getting a disease as it prevents you from transmitting it to someone else. And so it actually is an act of selflessness to wear a mask. It's a little bit of a pain, but it means that you're not going to give the coronavirus to someone else, and you may have it and not know it. So that's something that I just learned that's important. And certainly, you know, we've all got it. I tell you, when I had to go through Logan Airport to get down to Washington, I certainly wore a mask. Now, sometimes I'm running in a wide open place and make sure I'm never close to anyone. That's different. But yeah, I mean, yuck, droplets from runners a foot from you. Yuck.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see a lot of in the city, you know. It's like you're on Comm Ave and people are just, it's like, yeah. I mean, and again, I'm all for running, but just like, don't be a jerk, you know.
Yeah, and maybe cut back on the basketball games.
Yeah, there's no basketball right now, right?
You know, the other thing I learned about this, just specific to this, well, first is in general, but especially important with this one, you know, one of the things that's so dangerous about this new coronavirus is that it's highly transmissible. So it means that for everybody who gets it, they're not likely to just give it to one other person. They're likely to give it to 2, 3, 4, 5 other people. And what wearing a mask does is it just cuts down on that transmission rate. And if we can get the average transmission rate below 1, so that every person who gets sick is at most giving it to one other person, but perhaps not giving it to anybody, then actually the virus will just die out because it won't have enough new hosts to live in. So the point is that you're not only being selfless in wearing a mask and making sure you're not spreading it, but you're contributing in a real patriotic way to ensure that this virus actually can get snuffed out in our communities. So it's all the more reason to, you know, to just up and wear a mask, and you might not like it, but it's the thing to do right now, and I hope more people will do it.
Totally.
All right, Maura, well, thank you so much for joining us. We've got more questions we can't get to, but thank you. We've learned a lot. Really appreciate it, and we're so grateful for leadership.
Well, I'm really grateful for yours, and this is a marathon, so my hope, though, is this. There's a lot that need built or rebuilt, you know, as we move through this. And my hope is that we can work together to build and rebuild things in a more just and equitable way, you know, and sensible way. And I hope that that's one of the silver linings that comes out of all this. But thank you for the fight you bring every day in D.C. And I hope that you and your family continue to be healthy and safe now that you're, you know, on the other side of things.
Same. You said it so well, you know, in every tragedy, there's an opportunity. And we have an opportunity as a country now to build a better, stronger, more united country coming out of this pandemic than we had coming in. We've got a lot of ways to go. We've got a lot of work to do just to get through it. But I share that optimism and that hope, and certainly a commitment to do my part to help us get there. Attorney General, thank you so much. I'll see you again soon.
All right. Thank you, Congressman. See you.